This is Hannah Lazar
and Tiffany the Last
sitting here at North Coast Repertory Theater, where we got an opportunity to witness a wonderful production of Tuesdays with Maury. We got to sit and talk with the actors, stage manager, and general manager of North Coast Repertory Theater, as well as participate in an audience talk back, and were fortunate enough to listen in on Robert Grossman's musical performance in the cafe. Listen in as we talk in depth about Tuesdays with Maury.
And foolish though it may seem, to me that's everything.
Everybody, this is Robert Grossman, Michael Sears, and Christopher Williams.
Christopher is our stage manager, the man who runs the show, without whom we'd be lost. Well, I suppose you're wondering why I called you here tonight.
We're just going to open it up to questions and have an open discussion back and forth. I'll kind of facilitate and repeat questions so that everybody is sure to hear them. If you could raise your...
Maury lives.
Uh-huh.
Can't take you anywhere.
Robert soiled himself.
It happens, huh? So if you just raise your hand quickly, you know, here we go.
When was the play? This play version? How long after the?
The question was, when was the play written? How long after the book? Anybody know?
Well, I think the copyright on the script says 2003, and the book was written in 1996. So.
And the television production was when?
A year ago? 2 years ago?
The television production, I believe, was almost right after the book.
Oh, was it?
I think it was.
It would have to be because Jack Lemmon is no longer with us.
Right. Yeah.
And I believe it was the last thing that Lemmon did in his career, right?
Maury?
Yeah.
Probably, somewhere around there.
But I personally have not seen the film, so... I couldn't elaborate or elucidate on the film at all.
No. Well, I read the book a long time ago, but as I remember it, Mitch's character wasn't as defined, and the inner conflict wasn't as embedded in the book as it is in the play. Is that true?
The question was, you know, that Mitch's character in the book did not seem as defined as it was in the play.
Well, because... why don't you answer that question?
You have an idea.
Well, I think that is to be expected because just making Mitch the narrator of the piece... on the stage, as opposed to somebody writing a book mostly talking about Maury and his feelings about him, you're not going to get the reveal on the character that you will through an actor's work. But, you know, mind you, we are still who we are, and, you know, other actors would approach these parts quite differently, and you'd see yet another take on who these people are.
It was great contrast. I love the character contrast, and that setup, you know, really sets it up. That really gives the message across. So it was a great job.
Yeah it's the connection that these two men have for each other, perhaps because they come from such different worlds, is what David, the director, was after from the get-go. As far as he was concerned, unless we were really reaching out to one another and bringing out of each other what was necessary to, you know, illuminate this piece, without that there is nothing, without the connection between the two men. So
I like, too, that I think that something I like about it is that our idea in working on it was that that final moment with Maury, when Mitch finally is able to cry, that's really the beginning, rather than now he's fixed, right? That's the moment that opens him up to the work of what it is to be human, as compared to, well, now that he's cried, then now he's connected, and the marriage is fine, the career is fine, all of that. But that Maury's death really is the moment that it's a moment of that Mitch's new life begins. Mitch Albom, the writer, you know, changed his life a good amount after his experience with Maury. And we were talking about wondering what, you know, I mean, we don't know explicit details, but we can see from his career track and those kinds of things that he made different choices after his experience than he had prior.
Did you know if he wrote any follow-up pieces reflecting back how his life changed?
Yeah, he's got a book on the bestseller list right now. New York Times number one.
I don't know of anything that specifically relates to his experience with Maury, but he has written, I think there's two books that he has. And yeah, this latest one is number one New York Times now.
The question was, how did these two actors end up in this play? How did that casting process happen?
Well, I've worked with David many times before. I've done The Chosen here that David directed, and I have done three other productions of The Chosen elsewhere that David has directed. I think, counting this show, David Ellenstein and I have done probably seven shows in which he's directed me, and eight shows, the first one where we first met, he played my son in a production of Beau Geste in Michigan. That's how we met. So he and I have known each other since the 80s. And we're kind of a mutual admiration society, he and I. And so he called me. He asked me if I'd be interested in doing this show a good 6 months ago. I don't know if he spoke to me about it when I was here last. What was the last show I did here?
Halpern and Johnson.
Yeah, David directed Halpern and Johnson as well. I can't remember if David mentioned Tuesdays with Maury at that time, but I seem to have a vague memory of him doing so. And we firmed it up when he called me in New York and asked me to come out and do it. You know, I love to work in this theater, and you know, it's a pleasure being in this town. You know, there's no worries about the winter here.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, anytime.
I had my wife and I were living in New York, and we moved here almost 3 years ago. And David had called me into audition maybe three or four times in the past couple years, and then I didn't know about this piece, and David had called me and asked me to come in to audition, and so I did. Robert and I never read together. I didn't meet Robert until the first day of rehearsal. So
it was a long journey, let me tell you. It was a long journey.
Is this a big
did you
journey?
Have to do some medical research of ALS?
There were actually two questions there, so let's do the medical history. Did you have to do some research?
Well, certainly, I apprised myself of the situation. As the script says, how the body deteriorates and so forth. But I also had the Nightline tapes to let me know who Maury was in person. Now, I did not go about doing this by trying to copy what I saw on the tape. I want you to understand that. But where the man was coming from and what he needed to communicate and the kind of soul that he has, you know, because a human being like this, you know, he never dies because he just passes all this stuff on to other people, and we have our at least some evidence that we are a little bit better than we sometimes appear to be. And as long as people like that are passing that kind of thing along, that those people never die. And the nice thing is, you know, obviously that he's there to be seen in those Nightline interviews. He changed people's lives. He changed Ted Koppel. He certainly completely changed Mitch Albom's life. I think Mitch Albom would have gone on to be Bob Costas or something like that if he hadn't met Maury. I mean, if he hadn't reuned with Maury and been so moved by his experience with this man. Would be wonderful to hear him talk about it, but of course.
You had a question.
Is this a true story?
Mm-hmm. Is it a true story?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. In part, that's what, I mean, honestly, when I first read the script, I thought, oh, you know, it can tend towards the sentimental. And we talked about that a good deal in the rehearsal process, and how do we keep it honest? How do we keep from wallowing in the sentimentality? And I remember David saying, well, you know, the fact that it's true, that, you know, that we go, oh, come on, who really says that? Who really says, you know, love one another? Who really says, you know, make people the priority? And but he did, and Mitch had this experience. So the fact that it was a true story for me made me not feel so responsible for the what's the word, for whether or not I thought it was sentimental or not. I simply could give over to the fact that this was his truthful experience and, you know, embrace it as such.
We are, though.
What?
We're sentimental beings.
Well, sure.
We are. We just don't like to have our noses rubbed in it. You know?
Yes.
I think one of the things that makes it so bearable for us and not saccharine and overly done is the way Robert played Maury, with a smile and with the constant joy of life. And that keeps it from being maudlin. And
well, that was him.
Yeah.
That
was it. That really makes the difference. Mm-hmm.
Really was him. It's, you know, there's a real determination on the part of this man. You know, the worse it gets, the better he gets. The worse it gets, the more he's devoted to the idea of, you know, I'm on my way. You know, and I'm gonna take it all. Whatever it is, I'm on my way. It's not, you know, it's nothing new, and he knew that. But, you know, we need to be reminded, and he knew that. So he did it the best he could. At the end, just kept on going. A Yiddish saint.
We'll take a couple more questions. Are there anything else? Yes.
Did he ever meet Mitch Albom before he made this play?
I wish I had. I was certainly in Detroit enough that I might have run into him, but I never did.
And there's this Nightline DVD that we have, and he's on there, being interviewed by Ted Koppel somewhat extensively. A lot of what he says on the DVD is almost verbatim what exists in the script in terms of him describing the experience that he had with Maury and some of the things that he learned. So that's, but I've not met him in person, no.
Yes.
The thing that really came to me was how Maury was a teacher to the end. And the student wasn't always ready to learn.
Yes, and David...
In the end, he got it. And that was...
David made sure I never forgot that. Mm-hmm. That was the cutting edge of what we were doing, is that he simply said to me, if there's ever a moment where you forget that Maury's a teacher, you've lost him. So we make sure we hold on to that specific.
And are the references in the beginning, the I, thou, is that to Martin Buber?
Yeah.
Because he has a very famous essay on education in which he says, the student is a reality. The teacher must become a reality. And he develops this existential relationship between the two. That has to happen before education really has to happen.
Yeah, nothing could be truer. Not for me, anyway. When I was very young, if a teacher and I connected, I did well. But if a teacher and I didn't connect, it was a waste of time. And when I was going to school in Hollywood, California, there weren't a hell of a lot of teachers, I'll tell you that. Oh, boy. Things are a little different now, I think.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
If y'all don't feel like going home, I'm going to spend 15 or 20 minutes in the cafe with my guitar.
Mike Sears, Mitch, playing Mitch Albom in Tuesdays with Maury.
So other than this book being mainly revolving around these two characters, okay, Mitch and Maury, what sparked this play really into being a two-person show rather than introducing all the characters from the book?
Well, I can only speak from the research that I've done. I know that the reason that the book... Mitch Albom said that the reason that he ever wrote the book in the first place was because Maury was having difficulty with his medical bills. I don't know if his insurance had dried up or what, but there was an issue that he was continuing to deteriorate, and the expenses were adding up, and he was going to be leaving his family with a sizable debt. So Mitch Albom took the recorded sessions that they had and culled it into a book, and the idea was then that it was simply going to be a means to an end in terms of the profits from the book would go to take care of his medical bills. And so that's how the book ever came into being. And then I don't know how the play came about. Like I said, I think that it's 2003 is the copyright date. And so it's fairly recent. I would imagine that the reason they made it a two-character play was for the sake of simplicity,
mm-hmm.
And you know, focusing in some of the videos that we have seen. You know, Maury has two sons who were attending on him during his final months. His wife Charlotte was certainly a major part of the picture. So there were a lot of people involved, but I would imagine that for the sake of simplicity. And for, you know, when you write a play, you have to really decide what's the story you want to tell, and you have to, you know, you have to let go of so many things. I mean, a lot of times with plays, I'll hear someone say, well, you know, I wanted to hear more about such and such. And you say, well, yeah, that's a different play. You know, the player would have to choose to write that play. So my guess would be for simplicity's sake,
mm-hmm.
and to really focus on that relationship.
Well, as sitting in the audience, it's really fun to watch you step aside from him. I like how you guys created that, how he stays in character, the light dims, and then, you know, you walk over to the side of the stage, and then the audience is focused on you. What's your favorite scene to play with Maury as Mitch? I mean, is it... Do you favor stepping aside and rather talking to the audience, or do you favor the interaction with you and Maury as Mitch?
I don't know that I would say one over the other. Certainly both of them are anchored in the other person, meaning with Mitch or with the audience. It's been enjoyable to see what the audience responds to in the direct address, because in rehearsal, you know, we do the same thing, you know, where we're addressing the audience, but there's no audience there other than the director and the stage manager. And so to have the opportunity, like with, there's a bit about the egg salad, right? You say, oh, unfortunately, like, see egg salad, and then the audience will go, oh, you know, moments of recognition or audible responses. So it's fun to hear what people hear, what they respond to, but I don't know that I would be able to say anything that I, you know, in this it just doesn't stop, you know what I mean? So it just, each scene goes to the direct address, to the next scene, to the address, the scene, so there's a flow through it as compared to, you know, this, oh, your big scene coming up, you know, or I love that scene. So yeah, I'm babbling. I don't know that that answers it, but yeah.
Well, you know, it's obvious to the audience that Mitch is getting a lot out of his Tuesdays with Maury,
right.
And not a lot is talked in this play about what Maury is really getting out of these Tuesdays, but that's because he's probably staying in character as the teacher, the ultimate teacher. So as teachers, we definitely gain so much. It's almost a very selfish thing to do, to be a teacher, almost. So who do you think got more out of these Tuesdays with Maury, Mitch or Maury?
Well, you know, Maury says, during our first visit, Maury says, you know, this disease has been hard. I've had to stop swimming, stop driving, stop teaching, and you know, you know what that does to me. And yet I think we figured out that from the time that Mitch begins coming, it's about a 6-month span. I don't know that for certain, but I think that's what we figured out. And I wonder if Maury would have died sooner had he not had 6 more months of teaching, because he wasn't up to that point. There was a period in there when he stopped teaching at Brandeis and before Mitch comes. So it's kind of a yin-yang, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know that, you know, because we say, well, why does Mitch come back? Why, you know, after that first visit, you know, I say, that's it. That's, you know, I'm done. I did my duty. That's it. And yet, there's that nagging voice, you know. I'm young and healthy and I'm miserable, and he's, you know, frail and near death and you know, on cloud 9. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, let me go back and see if I can figure it out, you know. So I would have to say that it's you know, they fit together, you know, they're both feeding a need that the other has.
Definitely.
Yeah.
In the book, it's talked, you know, that the pink hibiscus plant is referenced,
right,
many times. And in the play, the pink hibiscus plant is maybe mentioned once by Mitch when he's talking to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not a focal point of this play.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that.
Well, from the little that I know, on the video of him, the hibiscus plant is sitting on his windowsill, right? And he's in kind of one of those, it's like a recliner type thing, but it goes all the way back, and the plant is right there by his head, but he doesn't, even in the video, there's no really big reference to it, you know, in terms of the importance of it. You know, I don't know, in terms of the play, maybe the idea of how would you make that active, you know, how would you make this idea an active idea that's part of the process, you know. There are some things, I think there are some things that we see and we experience in a way that doesn't allow, or there aren't words for, you know. We see something happen in nature, you know, and the beauty of it, the simplicity of it. We get something from it, but how to make that active, how to articulate that in a way that illuminates the play, that moves the story forward, you know.
In this production, it seemed like the leaves of fall might have, that was referenced a few times, mm-hmm. that might have taken mm-hmm. the place. I don't know if that's in the book.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he talks about leaves are most colorful before they die, you know, the final reference that it is fall, you know, and the colors outside. Yeah, it seems to be, you know, that they're looking at the season more so than the plant. Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't have used that more.
Well, in the talk back, we discovered that you and Robert really didn't get a chance to meet each other mm-hmm. before the auditions and everything, but you two have really great chemistry on stage. So how did that happen? Did it just happen like magic, or did it happen over a course of some time?
No. And I'm not talking out of school, because I know Robert would share. It was hard at first, you know. Robert and I both are strong personalities. We have definite opinions about things. And for me, I think what it came down to was he's the only hope I have. You know, he's like the out here, he's the only thing I have to hold on to, you know. And so how to develop that trust, you know. And it's difficult, you know. We had 4 weeks of evening rehearsals, you know, in a sometimes you have a production where you have 8-hour rehearsals and you have a little bit more time, but we had an evening rehearsal, and you know, a lot of different elements coming in, so and not knowing each other, not knowing each other's style of working, you know, all of us wanting to create a product that we felt good about and wanted to put our names on. So Robert and I, you know, it took some work to find a common ground. And then, in fact, David, the director, you know, had said one day, you know, something's not clicking, something's not working. So as tawdry as it sounds, he was like, "It's $20. Go get drunk," right?
That's an excellent way to get
to
know one another.
We didn't get drunk, you know, not in Del Mar on $20, but we went and had a couple beers, and actually, it was kind of we did. We went. We had a couple drinks. We talked. You know, we were able to kind of put things out on the table, talk about, you know, what maybe was going on, and it. I mean, not to sound corny, but it was a little. It was like pixie dust of some, you know what I mean? And you know, some cheap whiskey and potato soup, and we were now best friends, you know. I'm being silly, but I would honestly say, you know, I have enjoyed working with him so much, and I feel, I think the biggest thing is that I feel safe with him, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel safe to make a mistake or to have something go wrong, and I know that he would be there for me, right?
So. Especially since this play is so about truth and emotion mm-hmm. and feeling, it would be obvious to the audience if there wasn't that chemistry mm-hmm. or that trust mm-hmm. and that vulnerability. And mm-hmm. That's great mm-hmm. that you guys were able to accomplish
yeah.
that.
And what I like about it, I like the fact that Robert and I are not... he's feisty, you know. I like that our relationship is not gooey. You know what I mean? There's some energy behind it, and I think that helps. You know, I think that helps a lot.
So to quote Maury in the book, anyway, he says,
what is close to your heart? So we at piratepods.com want to ask Mike, what is close to your heart?
Probably my lungs. be the first thing. What is close to my heart? Oh, Lord.
That's liquor. No, yeah. Just kidding.
Right now, the whiskey going down. No.
That's water.
Yeah, you know, that's close to my heart. My wife, my dog, you know.
Is that what you think about when you're on stage, when you have to feel? What do you think about? How do you get into character?
Oh, no.
Is it different for every place?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, you're going moment to moment, so, you know, there are different ideas behind different moments. Honestly, if I listen to him, you know, if I look at him, if I take him in, you know, if I just take in what's in front of me, you know, respond to what he's saying, listen to what he's saying, you know, have a personal understanding of what it is he's saying to me. I don't have to do a lot. I don't have to bring in a lot of outside understanding. You know, work off of him, listen to him, see him, take him in, and be present with him, you know, as best I can. So, but yeah, I mean, there are moments that I need a deeper understanding, that I would, you know, use things from my own life, and that varies from play to play. Some plays it's, you know, there's more work to be done, and some plays it's more accessible, you know. So this play, I actually thought this play would be, it surprised me at some point that there were moments that I needed to have a deeper understanding of than I did, mm-hmm. you know. And so, and that comes from, you know, training or however an actor chooses to work. But it really is working off of him, you know, seeing him, taking him in.
Is this the first play that you've done that's based on a true story?
As far as I know, you know, I mean, this is explicitly, the playwright puts himself in the play and says, here's my story. So, you know, without knowing the other playwright's intent, mm-hmm. you know, but this is certainly the most autobiographical. Most shows like this are generally one-person shows, I would say. You know, there's a lot of solo shows where someone's sharing their life experience, so... Which I suppose is, well, no, you couldn't do that this way. But yeah.
Can we ask you how you came up with the idea to do this production? It was mentioned in the talk back that you called the actors.
I know this play is very close to David. He likes these kinds of plays that can touch people and that can literally change some people's lives, you know. My stepson, who's a teenager who just saw this play, all of a sudden this week, he's been like the nicest guy in the world. Mm-hmm. It really, and he commented to his mother on the way home that he sees things a little differently just by watching this show. And he's a 15-year-old kid. You know, that these words actually meant something to him. That was surprising, you know. So I think David really enjoys those kinds of plays, and it's what he's really great at, directing those plays. And the idea of keeping it simple and keeping it human and keeping it real, I think he does best. I've been able to work with David several times, and actually with Robert as well, on The Chosen, which David directed. Robert and I and David did it in Phoenix as well as here. And David, as a director, and speaking from an actor's point of view, gives so much to the... to the actors, I mean, at least he did for me, allowing you to just express what you need to express. And then he just looks and goes, okay, well, let's try it this way. This might not work, but he does let you explore and get to the heart of the matter, if you will.
So do you work strictly for North Coast Repertory Theater as the stage manager?
No, I come in and do whatever they ask me to do. I'll work for David anytime. I really will. I think he has given so much as a person to me as an artist, and I will work for David anytime he wants me to work for him. And so he needed a stage manager here, and I said, sure. So it's my second time stage managing in this theater, but I love this theater. I do. I love everybody in it. I mean, Karen, everybody is appreciative of the artists that come in. Mm-hmm. And that's very rare, unfortunately.
So you have a soft spot in your heart for North Coast, right?
Absolutely. I will do whatever I can to help this theater get where it needs.
Well, and you did one of the most basic things that you could do for any theater or for any art is introduce it to youth. Mm-hmm. And that's such a, you know, not a downfall with theater, but something that theater is trying to reach out to is the youth, because a lot of people that go to theater are middle-aged or older. And
Absolutely.
So, you know, doing that, bringing your stepson and changing his perspective on whatever will continue to enlighten him to theater in the coming years, and that's what's really important. So just doing that versus collecting maybe $20 here, $20 yeah. there.
That's true. You know, I actually think about that all the time. I think about our audiences. Where's the future of theater? You know, everybody, it's easy to go to a movie because you can be disconnected. You can talk in the movie theater, unfortunately. You know, there's that disconnect, and not many people come to see theater, live theater, and a lot of people don't know it exists, younger people. I'm a college professor as well, and I teach students that are underprivileged, if you will, you know, gang members and such. They don't even know theater exists. They don't know it. And so when I am able to get them into the theater, and I teach them theater, I teach theater and dance to them, and art and music, and it's like opening a door that they've never been through. And that's what's exciting, like you said, it's getting those youth into the theater to realize it's really fun. It's not standing up there and speaking, you know, in this and it's not disconnected from their own lives.
Like Katharine Hepburn?
Yeah, I know, Robert does a little Katharine in there. I noticed that, yeah. but yeah, it is getting the youth in the theater. It really is. It's a huge part of it. It's a major mission, I think, that needs to be, all theaters need to be able to do that.
Yeah, well, fortunately, North Coast Rep works with the youth in mm-hmm. San Diego County, so that's
yeah.
really...
They even have a theater school, which is great, you know, so they're training them.
So Karen, we're sitting here with Karen Begin from North Coast Repertory Theater. She's the general manager. Karen, tell us about the theater school for children.
Well, the theater school at North Coast Rep, I think, is in its 11th year here, and they teach classes, kids of all ages. I think starts around 8 and goes up to 18. They do 3 sessions throughout the year. There's a summer camp in the summer, and then a Shakespeare workshop also in the summer. That's sort of an all-day thing. The first production this year is The Trial of the Big Bad Wolf, and that is on November 30th through December 3rd. You know, it poses the question of what really happened with the Big Bad Wolf.
Uh-huh.
So our theater school students are going to let us know.
And explore that.
They're going to explore all the options there.